is the member for Port Adelaide in the Federal Seat of Port Adelaide, the local seat. Mark Butler, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Now, we'll start with you. You come from a long line of politicians in the state. I'm saying before you, in the lead up, in the hour before, you're kind of one of the few families that's been in politics virtually since Federation. In fact, Alexander Downer is sort of the only other one that sort of springs to mind. Your great-great-grandfather, Sir Richard, who was Premier during what he was in the House over the period of Federation, then your great-grandfather, Sir Richard Leighton Butler, was there, and both of them were, they were in tough times. Dismal Dick Butler, as he was known, was Treasurer, because it was during a period with the problems of Federation going on, and there was drought and depression during that period. So, and then, of course, your great-grandfather, who was heavily involved with keeping Holden in South Australia, in fact. So, a long line of politicians.
A heavily interrupted one. Both of them had passed on. Obviously, the first one had passed on decades before I came around. My grandfather and my father both were not involved in politics, but it's true. Both of the other ones, my great-grandfather and great-great-grandfather, were pretty heavily involved at some amazing times in South Australia's history. The first Premier was only Premier for a relatively short time, but stayed in politics for quite a time after that. Was involved in the establishment of Outer Harbour.
Yes.
Down here at the port, which for many years was known as Butler's Folly. People thought it wasn't going to work. I think it has worked very successfully. I think we can declare that. He was also a representative at the first Murray-Darling Basin talks to try and get the first agreement up in 1915, which tells you how long, particularly South Australia, has been striving to get a fair deal from the upstream states on a distribution of water resources for the Murray-Darling. I mean, back then, obviously, people were more concerned with access to the waterways as a matter of trade rather than the sort of environmental sustainability considerations we have now.
Indeed, up until Federation, there were customs houses at each of the borders, not far north of, not far east of Rimmer. There is a customs house.
That's right.
Echuca was famous for its customs house.
What did come out of that agreement, although it wasn't much by way of a fair distribution of resources, what did come out of that agreement was the locking of the river, and the first Richard was involved in doing that. But the second Richard really did run the state at a very, very fragile time. Mm-hmm. South Australia's economy back then was hit probably hardest of all of the state economies by the Depression because of our reliance on agricultural exports. And at about the same time, Ted Holden had pretty much signed a contract to shift Holdens, which had been operating down here in Port Adelaide since before the turn of the century, before Federation. He'd signed the contract to shift the whole operation to Fisherman's Bend in Victoria, and it took a very serious amount of government work led by Dick to convince Ted Holden to keep the Holdens operations here. And really for decades after that, both at Woodville and then obviously Elizabeth, that's been such a cornerstone for South Australia's economy. But now, 80 years later, we're dealing really with the same challenge that Dick faced in the 30s, that South Australia faced in the 30s.
It must sort of bring us kind of pang of, well, hey, he had the vision to protect manufacturing in the States, and of course Holden was a huge part of that, and he was a motor body part of it during the war, the munitions and the like, so it was a huge part of that manufacturing history.
That's right, it was the centrepiece of a change in the South Australian economy, a recognition that we couldn't just be an agricultural economy, we needed to industrialise our economy as well. So
both Richards were pastoralists, living up and around the Moora and Mara area. To recognise that as traditionally living off the land, if you like, and to be so heavily involved in what Sir Thomas Blaythorpe obviously carried on as well.
That's right. And Playford carried that on over the course of the war period and post-war period. And it infected or impacted all sorts of different government policies. At about the same time, Dick recognised that a range of other social supports needed to be put in place if we were going to be an industrial economy centred around Adelaide. So, for example, he established the Housing Trust in 1935, I think it was, which Playford actually opposed. Playford crossed the floor and voted against the establishment of the Housing Trust as a socialist measure. But after that, obviously, became a very strong supporter of the Housing Trust and saw it spread through Adelaide, the Iron Triangle, and such like we saw.
Well, of course, housing was such an incredibly difficult thing, not just in Australia, but globally. And even Roosevelt, with his New Deal, invented Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, basically, to be able to fund housing that government couldn't, and to raise money but provide government guarantee to those loans, of course, in a very difficult period.
That's right, very much.
The Housing Trust was the beginning of the need, and it was a need that flowed on and maybe not as great today, but is still there, it's still very real.
Well, it's a very different need today. I mean, I've had the privilege of being the housing minister in the last government for a period, and we have different housing challenges nowadays, but they're no less serious than they were in the 30s. The availability of affordable housing for, particularly for the youngest generation, Gen Y, is very serious. Here in Adelaide it's serious, but when you go to Sydney and look at the average house prices there, how a 25 or 30 year old can think about owning their own house is often beyond the imagination of those of us who are lucky enough to live in Adelaide.
I did own a business that had offices in Sydney and other capital cities, but you know, I had employees who were living as far away as an hour catching the train every day.
That's right.
Because they couldn't afford housing any closer to the city.
Tens of thousands still commute from Wollongong down the Central Coast and from even as far north as Newcastle because they can't get housing in Sydney. And this is going to impact on everything. Everything. I mean, we currently have a system of retirement in Australia, for example, that is heavily dependent on the idea that older Australians own their own house. Now, about 80% of Australians over 65 today own their own house without a mortgage, and that is a very important part of why the age pension that we currently have is sustainable. And by world terms, it's a relatively low pension, but it is largely sustainable for people because most tend not to have housing costs. They don't have a mortgage payment, they don't pay rent. We received some research when I was the housing minister that said that by 2050, the percentage of over 65, so the current Gen Y really, the percentage of them who will own their own house outright once they retire will be about 2.5% compared to the current 80%, which is an extraordinary change and will have very serious implications for the quality of life in retirement of those.
We really are facing a challenge, aren't we, as the baby boomers roll through into retirement. It's a massive challenge brought on by our population imbalance almost. So it's the post-war baby boom, the introduction of immigration into this country has sort of amplified this age group that is now getting into retirement.
Well, Australia is better positioned than any other country with this because most other countries have a very big baby boom after the war, and then smaller generations following it. Now, Australia is really unique, with the possible exception of the US, but pretty unique in the developed world in that the generations that followed the baby boom, so my generation, Generation X, Generation Y, largely because of a relatively good birth rate we still have, but also ongoing immigration, are just as big, if not bigger, than the baby boom generation. So you look forward a number of decades that we do have a good capacity to sustain the retirement of a very big generation. But
some days we don't think it, but we really are the lucky country.
We're incredibly lucky. I mean, the big thing about the retirement of the baby boom generation is how much bigger that generation is than their parents' generation. Because their parents' generation were born during very, very tough times, World War One, the interwar period and the Depression, the birth rate in Australia hit a very, very low rate, and there was next to no immigration for most of those 20 years. So what we've seen for 20 years is a relatively small generation in retirement being followed right now, because the first of the baby boomers, the oldest of the baby boomers, hit 65 in 2011. They're already on the rise, and it's a much, much bigger generation than we've been dealing with in retirement, in aged care, and healthcare, and so on, over the last 20 or 30 years.
Now, you're the member for Port Adelaide. You are a local these days. Your family, in fact, is a local. Because there's not a semaphore RSL Anzac Day where Mark Butler is a bit of a family tradition, I believe.
Yeah, but, well, the elder brother of Dick, we were talking about, the second premier from the 30s, was the head of the RSL through the 20s. He served in the Boer War, in the First World War, was injured, came back and went around South Australia pulling together what came to be called Butler's 500 to take back to France. There were glutton for punishment, obviously, but served with distinction. was the era. And he came back and was the head of the RSL in the 20s and actually laid the stone down the Semaphore War Memorial at the Esplanade there in 1924. So there is a bit of a resonance there as well, and I had the great privilege, very glad to have the privilege of emceeing the Anzac Day services down there, Port Adelaide Semaphore RSL host, which have just gone from strength to strength.
And the
next year's will be an extraordinary service because it's the 100th anniversary of the Gallipoli landings. I know that the RSL down there has got some pretty extraordinary stuff planned, and through some grants that we put in place when we were still in government, and I'm glad to say the current government has kept in place, we're able to provide some very strong support to an extraordinary service that will be put on the 25th of April next year.
We'll take a short break and we'll come back and talk about your role in the House, because you've been a minister of a number of things, and sitting on the shadow benches now, still have a very active role to play in the House at the moment. We'll be back shortly. My guest this morning is Mark Butler. He is the member for Port Adelaide in the federal seat of Port Adelaide, not the local seat. He gets to visit Canberra far too often, probably, for his liking, but anyway, that's what he's chosen to do.